Good morning. Excuse me. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Mark Stewen, present today to argue on behalf of Mr. Charplini. I may refer to him at times as a plaintiff, but I'm here on behalf of plaintiff appellant. In short, the facts that are the background to this appeal are the following. Mr. Charplini filed a verified complaint on July 11th of 2001, seeking leave to proceed in forma pauperis in the district court. He sought injunctive and monetary relief in that complaint on June 15th at district court, although finding that he did not have the financial wherewithal to pay the filing fee, then said it was going to go on to address the merits, and in doing so, dismissed with prejudice, concluding that the plaintiff had merely set forth a disagreement with his medication protocol and had not sufficiently set forth an allegation.
Don't you have a very serious mootness problem? He's not in the prison anymore, can't get damages, so what does he want?
Your Honor, we submit that the request for monetary relief does continue to be viable. The cases cited by the state, we believe, are overread by the state to the extent that they assert them for the proposition that it can only be relief going forward. The Ashley and Day case stand for the proposition in our reading that the existence of the imminent danger must exist at the time of the pleading or the filing of the complaint, and should not be read to say that if there, if it is appropriate to order.
The imminent danger seems like something that allows someone to sue rather than a basis for damages.
Well, you'd have to have an Eighth Amendment claim, a viable Eighth Amendment claim, to have damages here.
It may well be that in the final analysis, if you will, that he has to have a viable Eighth Amendment claim to recover damages. And we are at a stage in the proceedings. We're seeking the opportunity to pursue that claim, a prisoner such as plaintiff.
But are you seeking damages for his being in imminent danger or damages for violation of the Eighth Amendment?
As asserted by the plaintiff in his complaint, the request for damages...
Forget the complaint. What are you seeking now?
The prayer for damages would be based on the notion, as alleged in the complaint, that prison personnel had demonstrated and engaged in deliberate indifference.
Eighth Amendment is what you...
He would like to get to the point where that can be more fully explored. In order to get to that point, he has to allege, and we assert, did sufficiently allege in his complaint, imminent danger of serious physical injury, thus relieving him, at least temporarily, of the obligation of having...
But
that's where you run into Judge Posner's mootness problem here. If he's no longer in imminent danger, then he can't proceed to step two and attempt to establish an Eighth Amendment claim.
The difficulty I have with that analysis is that having announced that the question of timing is, was the prisoner in imminent danger at the time the complaint was filed, which it appears is now the standard and so forth, there appears to be no real basis on this record to fully evaluate whether or not that was the case. The fact that after the fact he gets transferred out of or released from the state system and is put in another...
Well, what Judge Evans is saying, if he's not in imminent danger, he can't bring the suit, right?
But he could...
Right? No. If he were in imminent danger, he couldn't have brought the suit, right?
Not without paying the filing fee.
So what if he were in imminent danger for just a day? And you say that happenstance gives him a right to seek damages without paying the filing fee. And I think what Judge Evans suggests is kind of arbitrary.
I don't know what to say in response to the notion that it's arbitrary. It appears clear to us that when a prisoner is in a situation, such as Mr. Charplini, and sufficiently and fully allege that he was in imminent danger of serious physical injury at the time his complaint was filed, that the change in circumstances after that should not deprive him of the right to proceed to request relief for monetary damages.
But there's a disconnect between imminent danger and monetary relief. So obviously monetary relief is not going to get you out of imminent danger. So you want to get out of imminent danger, you want to be allowed to sue so you can somehow get out of your imminent danger. But then that suggests that you're seeking some kind of injunctive relief. Once you're out of the imminent danger, then you're back in a situation where you're trying to get damages without paying the filing fee, even though you're not entitled to informer pauper status.
And while I will apologize in advance if I misapprehend the mechanism that 1915 put into place, it is my understanding that it is in part because of the possibility that there are times when prisoners are in imminent danger, that Congress and the courts have said it is appropriate to at least temporarily relieve that prisoner.
Temporarily. But, of course, giving him damages isn't any kind of temporary relief. It's not any relief at all.
It starts the process. And the fundamental complaint with what happened here is that this prisoner was not permitted the opportunity to start the process. Ultimately, the court may dismiss, may find that he failed to state a basis on which
relief. That's a separate point. The question we're talking about is relief, not whether he has a claim.
Our submission is that this is not moot because, having sought monetary damages, the posture in which the case is now, that it is not moot, that he should have had the opportunity to pursue his request for monetary relief.
In other words, he requested monetary relief at the same time you said he was in imminent danger.
Exactly.
But in your response to the mootness claim, did you reallege that he is now in imminent danger in county custody?
The assertion is made in the response in the affidavit of Mr. Sharplini that even though he's now in a county jail rather than the state system, that he continues not to receive the medications. It's not alleged as in the same level of detail as he did in his complaint, but essentially the allegation continues, yes.
I'm not sure where that gets us, but at least you're...
He hasn't sued the county.
No.
He has not, but then we get to the point, Your Honor, that as we indicated with your indulgence, one, we believe it's not moot because there was a prayer for monetary damages, and I understand the issue that we're in terms of the disconnect as you characterized it. Our view is that this was a mechanism by which to start the process, and having started the process, which he should have been permitted to do in June of 2001, it would have addressed the imminent danger. It would have permitted maybe injunctive relief in the short term, but then would have permitted either the state to challenge or the court to reevaluate the merits.
Aren't we really bifurcating the two? I mean, that's what you're talking about, because one is, at least as far as the state's gone, has passed, but you're still saying we should still hang on to the monetary relief part.
We are submitting that a prisoner in a situation such as Mr. Sharplini should not be foreclosed from the opportunity to seek damages when, in these circumstances, the district court, 4 days after the complaint is filed, dismisses the complaint with prejudice.
Well, if there's supposed to be, in this 1915, a mechanism for, a very narrow mechanism for somebody who's a frequent filer, who has had a lot of lawsuits and now has to convince the judge this is an exceptional case that should proceed. And he does that by alleging imminent danger. Why shouldn't that be viewed as some sort of a continuing status that you have to meet? It just doesn't make it seem a lot of sense to me. If on day one you allege an immediate danger and you file your lawsuit, and day two that danger isn't present anymore.
I submit the answer to that may very well lie in the question that we submit to you should be answered in favor of Mr. Charplini, and that is, if he otherwise has a viable Eighth Amendment claim, because even for that one day there was deliberate indifference and he suffered pain or injury, he should be permitted to pursue that, even if the damages are small.
That's an argument against the congressional limitation on filing lawsuits.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Stewart. Ms. Kickhaver?
Good morning. May it please the Court. I am Wisconsin Assistant Attorney General Carla Kickhaver, and I represent the defendant appellees, who are two Wisconsin prison psychiatrists and a prison warden. The district court's decision to dismiss this case should be affirmed because Sciarpellini failed to sufficiently allege imminent danger of serious physical injury when his allegations regarding medical care for his mental illness do not rise to the level of an Eighth Amendment violation. This case is about the limited exception to the three strikes rule. It's about deterring prisoners with a history of abusive litigation from filing another meritless lawsuit while still allowing an escape hatch for when time is of the essence because the inmate is in imminent danger of serious physical injury. The court has asked us to address three questions. First, whether mental illness can pose an imminent danger of serious physical injury. Second, how the exception is pled. And third, how the exception is proved. The parties agree on how the exception is pled, so I will focus on the first and third questions posed by the court, and I will also address the mootness issue. I think I'll start with the mootness issue since the court seemed to have the most questions about that. Mr. Sciarpellini's release from state prison renders this case moot because the imminent danger exception limits the available relief to prospective relief for the actions causing the imminent danger of serious physical injury. Now that Mr. Sciarpellini has been released from prison, he cannot get prospective relief from these defendants because the state defendants are no longer responsible for his medical care, and they have no control over what medications he does and does not receive. I think that's consistent with the language of the exception under 1915G, which says requires that the prisoner is in imminent danger of serious physical injury. And the cases say that the exception is a limited exception aimed at preventing future harm. Mental illness can pose an imminent danger of serious physical injury, but only if it rises to the level of an Eighth Amendment violation. The standard for the imminent danger exception is at least as high as the standard for an Eighth Amendment violation for three reasons. First, the language of the exception closely tracks the Eighth Amendment standard of deliberate indifference to a serious medical need in that both require a sufficiently serious harm and both require the prison condition to be the proximate cause of the harm. Second, most of the cases addressing the application and constitutionality of the exception use an Eighth Amendment standard or contain facts that would meet an Eighth Amendment standard. And finally, the claim for which the prisoner is in imminent danger must allege a constitutional violation because otherwise the district court would be required to dismiss the case for failure to state a claim under 1915E2B2 and under the screening mechanism in 1915A. In this case, Mr. Sciarpellini's allegations regarding medical care for his mental illness are not sufficient to meet the imminent danger exception because he's alleged nothing more than a disagreement over medical care, which is insufficient under the Eighth Amendment and for the imminent danger exception. In his complaint, he only takes issue with the defendant's decision not to prescribe certain medications. He doesn't claim that he was denied psychiatric care or that they failed to treat his panic attacks or that there's any indication that these...
Well, do you admit that the kind of mental distress or psychosomatic ailments created by these anxiety disorders can constitute imminent injury?
I think they could in certain...
Imminent danger, whatever.
I think they could in certain circumstances. The facts that he alleges in his complaint would meet the objective component of an Eighth Amendment violation, I think. I don't think he meets the state of mind requirement for an Eighth Amendment violation. I think there's a similar requirement when we're talking about an imminent danger violation.
Well, you're indicating that the complaint has to allege those particular facts to withstand the motion to dismiss?
I think in this case, Mr. Sciarpellini has essentially pled himself out of court by alleging, for example, that the defendants treated him 11 times in a two-month period. He also alleges, for example, that he was sent to the emergency room. So he was being given treatment for his symptoms, and I don't think that the facts he pleads rise to the level of an Eighth Amendment violation, and they certainly don't meet the imminent danger exception. briefly addressing the question of how the imminent danger exception is proved. If the exception is challenged after service, the district court has to examine affidavits and depositions to determine whether the imminent danger allegation is credible. The Third Circuit reached this conclusion in Gibbs versus Roman, and in Banos versus Again, the Fifth Circuit also implied that the exception has to be established. The conclusion is also consistent with the purpose of the three strikes rule, which is to deter meritless prisoner litigation, because this disincentive would be lost if the case was allowed to proceed beyond the initial stages without first determining whether the allegation of imminent danger is true. So in conclusion, based upon the facts stated in his complaint, Mr. Sharpolini has not sufficiently alleged that the named defendant's actions put him in imminent danger of serious physical injury. But even if his allegations were sufficient, this case has been rendered moot because Mr. Sharpolini has been released from prison and he can no longer receive the only relief available to him, which is prospective relief.
Oh, sorry. Yes, Mr. Stewart, how much time does he have?
No time.
No time. I want a minute to rebut.
If I might.
Sure.
Your Honor, the notion that the plaintiff somehow pled himself out of court by saying, well, when I suffer things, they treat me, comes dangerously close to, well, when I get beat up, they stitch me up. That, in part, goes to the notion that we would submit why the opportunity to pursue a prayer for damages ought to continue, even though he has been released from...
Well, but isn't psychiatric treatment an alternative to drug treatment of this psychiatric disorder? So a doctor might think psychiatric better than the drug. These drugs they give for mental problems can have serious side effects, of course, and be addictive and so forth. So,
Your Honor asks a question that I am unqualified to answer, and I would submit the record would not fully support, and that is why we would ask, as we did in our briefing, that this court reverse the decision of the district court and that it instruct the district court that Mr. Carplini be able to pursue the claim. It was inappropriate to dismiss his complaint with prejudice.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you to both counsel.